From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On June 26th, the Supreme Court struck down a Texas law that made gay sex a crime. Gay activists celebrated what they saw was a momentous step towards wider social acceptance. But the ruling appears to have hit a nerve with Americans. According to a USA Today CNN Gallup poll, public opposition to legal civil unions between gay couples has grown to 57%. Tonight on Point, is there a gay backlash in America? We begin in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where there's been a dramatic twist at the Episcopal Bishops' meeting, a final vote expected on whether to affirm the Reverend Gene Robinson as the church's first openly gay bishop has been delayed. Michael Paulson covers religion for the Boston Globe and joins us now from Minneapolis with the latest developments. Michael, what's the hitch?
Well, today the bishops, as you say, were scheduled to vote. This was going to be the last chapter in Gene Robinson's march toward becoming a bishop in New Hampshire, where Episcopalians had elected him as their bishop. But today there were two allegations made against the bishop-elect. The first is that he harassed an adult male at a meeting of Episcopalians in New England, that he touched him in a way that made the accuser feel uncomfortable. And the second allegation is that an organization that Robinson helped found called Outright, which is a peer support group for gay and lesbian teenagers, has a website that has a series of links that eventually lead to a sexually explicit site on the Internet.
So these allegations are being taken seriously enough to delay a vote, but seriously enough to delay a vote indefinitely?
Well, they are being taken seriously. The presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church of the U.S. announced that he had appointed a committee to investigate these allegations and has not set a rescheduled time for the vote. I think the allegation of inappropriate touching is the more serious of the two allegations, but there's no allegation here of any kind of criminal act. The allegation is of some kind of touching that made this guy feel uncomfortable, and where that will lead, I think nobody knows. The accuser, who I reached by phone earlier today, has declined to speak to me or other members of the press.
And until this point, how were the bishops set to vote?
You know, they were generally expected to approve Robinson's election. In the American Episcopal Church, bishops are elected by their diocese, so Robinson was elected in a four-way vote in New Hampshire in early June, but then they have to be ratified by the National Church. The National Church has two chambers, House of Deputies, which is lay people and clergy, and a House of Bishops. The House of Deputies voted by a surprisingly large margin on Sunday to confirm Robinson's election as a bishop, and the House of Bishops were generally expected to go along with that vote today.
There must be a thought that these allegations are some kind of spoiling tactic, Michael.
Absolutely. The Episcopal Church in the U.S. is deeply divided between the liberal majority that wants to reach out to gays and lesbians to allow gay and lesbian clergy to serve in all roles in the church, including as bishops, and a conservative faction that says that homosexuality is prescribed by the Bible, is always immoral, and that it would be wrong to have an openly gay bishop. The conservative faction had promised a surprise today, had said they would do whatever they could to defeat Robinson's confirmation as a bishop, but they are denying any connection to bringing these allegations forward.
So feelings are running high in both camps?
Very high. I think this is a very difficult moment for the church in the U.S. and in the world. As you know, the Episcopal Church in the U.S. is one of the branches of the Anglican Communion, the historically known as the Church of England, and many of the other leaders of the Anglican Communion around the world are quite concerned about the possibility that the American church would consecrate a gay bishop. Attitudes toward homosexuality are much more negative elsewhere in the world than they are here in the U.S.
Michael, thanks. And Michael Paulson covers religion for the Boston Globe. He's co-author of Betrayal, The Crisis in the Catholic Church. He spoke to me from Minneapolis, Minnesota. The hot-button issue of gay rights is heating up this summer. First, Canada granted same-sex couples the right to marry. Then the U.S. Supreme Court decriminalized gay sex. On television, homosexuals are giving straight guys makeovers. Against this backdrop, though, of growing tolerance, a recent poll suggests a backlash. According to a USA Today's CNN Gallup poll, the percentage of Americans who believe that homosexual relations should be legal dropped from 60% in May to 50% after the Supreme Court ruled in the Texas sodomy case. President Bush and the Vatican have spoken out against gay marriage. What do you make of these poll results? Are you seeing a backlash? Have the advances in gay rights over the past months caused you to give pause on where you stand on gay marriage, civil unions, gay adoption? When does tolerance become acceptance? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Susan Page, Chief Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Welcome, Susan.
Julian, it's great to be with you.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News Analyst Jack Beattie, Senior Editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Jack, good evening.
Hello, Julian. Hello to Susan Page.
Susan Page, to you first. And what do you make of these most recent poll figures?
Well, it's interesting, Julian. We've done actually four polls that deal with some, have some questions that deal with people's attitudes toward gay people. We did two in May and we did two in July, which happened to, not because we were smart, but because we were lucky, happened to bracket the Supreme Court decision. And we found two things. We found over the long term, if you look at a period of years, clearly Americans are becoming more accepting of gay people. About a third said they'd become more accepting of gay people. Just 8% said they'd become less accepting in recent years. And we had a great growth in the number of people who said they had had a friend or a coworker or a relative tell them they were gay, had a conversation about it. We think that's behind the long-term growing acceptance of gay people. But we did find a backlash between the May polls and the July polls on some of the questions. And we think the only intervening event has been the only big news event has been the Supreme Court decision, so we assume it relates to that. When we ask, for instance, do you think homosexual relations between consenting adults should be legal, which is a question we've asked since 1977. We have a long history on this question. We found that the number of people who said it should be legal had dropped to its lowest level since 1996. And when we ask about civil unions, support had dropped to its lowest level since we started asking about that in 2000. So we think it's pretty clear that there has been some reaction this summer, although that does not undermine the idea that generally people have become more accepting, more knowledgeable about acceptance toward gay people.
And you have no problem, Susan, using the word backlash. You don't just see this as a blip on the radar.
Well, it may not last long. We don't know that. But we know that there was a definite drop, a drop of about 10 points, of 12 points, in fact, on the whether homosexual relations between consenting adults should be legal. And because we've had it verified by these two polls on either side, which gives us a sample of about 4,000 people, which is, you know, pretty good size sample. I think that there's definitely been a reaction. How long it will last, that I don't know.
Jack, it's difficult to dismiss the evidence of the polls, isn't it, that we could be on the brink of a powerful conservative backlash here?
Well, indeed. I mean, that's been the case with Supreme Court decisions, which don't come through the democratic process. They come because nine men and women decide. And that has been an irritant with the abortion debate, that this was something that was sort of forced on Americans and we didn't have it through the democratic process and so on. And that makes Supreme Court decisions that are controversial already even more controversial. But, of course, the politics of this are shaping up, it seems to me, to be very interesting. In the last election, anti-gay campaign tactics and anti-gay rhetoric were all over the ideological map. Two-thirds of the voters in Nevada voted to put a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage, even though the state had laws that said that there wouldn't be gay marriage. There were push polls done in Arizona and New Jersey and New Hampshire and elsewhere where people would call up, often with effeminate voices, men saying on these automatic recorders, well, do you know that such and such is supported by the log cabin Republicans? If it were a Democrat, and Democrats did use anti-gay stuff, or vice versa if it were a Republican. Gay candidates were tarnished. In Tennessee, one gay group referred to a U.S. Senate candidate as a friend of leeches and perverts. In Texas, telephone messages went out saying the U.S. Senate candidate Ron Kirk supported gay rights. Flyers showing men kissing, two men getting married. These were circulated in Connecticut and Texas. So it is an issue, and it's one that has been used by both sides, but mostly by far-right and conservative Christian groups for Republican candidates.
Susan Page, though, again back to these poll results. Do they tell us that perhaps Americans are saying this far and no further, that civil unions, gay marriage, that is the stopping point?
You know, sometimes when we ask about these kind of values issues, opinions are pretty set. When we ask about abortion, opinions on abortion have been pretty set for years. I think what's happening with this issue is that people are still figuring out what they think about it. And that's why we see so much flux between polls just taken 2 months apart. So I don't know that people have decided what they think. I think there are a lot of Americans who until recently maybe didn't think about gay marriage as an issue. One effect of the Supreme Court decision, I think, was to be very encouraging to a lot of gay advocacy groups like the Human Rights Campaign because it seemed so far-reaching. It was also energizing to people on the other side of this issue. For instance, Christian evangelicals, I think, feel very strongly that marriage must be between a man and a woman. And the prospect that same-sex marriage might be on the horizon has energized that side too. For instance, one of the things we wonder, now we don't know the answer to this question, but we wonder if preaching from the pulpit has stepped up in the wake of the Supreme Court decision, and that might be reflected in this change in poll opinions. One of the groups that changed the most their opinions that led to this backlash were people who said they attended church about once a week. So that's one possible thing that's going on here. But I don't think it's a thing that I don't think Americans are firmly decided exactly what they think about some of these issues.
And Jack Beattie, of course, the Vatican chipped into the debate quite forcefully last week.
Yes, well-timed, and it did something similar with abortion years ago. It said that Democratic politicians who endorsed abortion rights were, flirting with excommunication. This doesn't work, and in fact, there's some evidence that it further adds to the alienation that rank-and-file Catholics feel from the Catholic Church. But it shows that this stuff is in the air, and that in some ways, gay bashing is the one bigotry that dare speaks its name today. You can say things about gay people, you can root them in the Bible, you can make claims about them and so on, that you just couldn't, that if you would use the word black or Jew or Catholic, you just couldn't say those things. You can still say them about gay people. They're being said. And much of this talk about the family is a way of sort of nudging prejudice in the ribs to say, children, you can't trust these people around children.
But Susan Page, you would perhaps not go as far to characterize these poll results as bigotry, as you suggested, more maybe a period of reflection on the part of American voters, just taking it in?
Well, I think we don't know yet. I think we need a period of time where we can go back and ask this question again, which we will be doing because it's so interesting, because it seems to be in a state of change. I'll tell you something that is interesting. I think when it comes to things in public, fairness in the workplace, Americans are pretty much decided that discrimination against gay people is wrong. In our poll, about 9 out of 10 Americans said that it was wrong to discriminate against gay people in the workplace, which is about as close to universal as you're going to get in a poll. But if you ask about things close to home like gay marriage or adoption of children, that's when you get this divide.
Susan, we must take a break. Susan Page, Chief Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, also On Point News analyst Jack Beattie. We're talking tonight about the momentum of the gay rights movement and the new poll numbers that could indicate a backlash. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about gay rights in America. The Supreme Court has decriminalized gay sex this fall. New York City will open the first public high school for gay teens in the nation. On television, gays are reality dating. New polls suggest after years of majority support for the gay lifestyle, Americans are now more evenly divided on the subject. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist wants to amend the Constitution to ban gay marriage. Do you agree with Senator Frist? What are you making of all the recent advances for gay rights? How do you see gay rights playing out in the upcoming presidential elections? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, and with On Point News analyst Jack Beattie. I'd like to bring into the conversation Alan Yang. He's a lecturer at Columbia University and has been writing about public attitudes towards gay and lesbian issues and civil rights over the past 50 years. Alan Yang, is there a backlash underway?
Well, I think that, you know, undoubtedly the Gallup numbers between May and July, the magnitude of the change between 9 to 12 points on these three measures Susan Page was referring to, does represent something of at least a transitory dip in terms of the state of public sentiment with respect to gay and lesbian rights.
Why is gay marriage, though, such a problem, it seems, with American voters?
I think that, you know, the issue historically is pretty new. I think the polling on the gay marriage issue has not really been going on for all that long. There is actually one thing I want to say about the issue of gay marriage. When you look at a couple of different trends over time, so taking a longer term look, say between 1996 and 2003, a new poll was also released, which was in the field roughly the same time as the July USA Today Gallup poll. And that what that actually shows is that support for gay marriage was increased by 12 points during that 7-year period, reaching 38%. And another CBS New York Times poll, which was also in the field during the same time in July, showed a 40% in favor of gay marriage itself as opposed to civil unions. So it's possible that the Gallup poll numbers, when put side by side with these other two polls that were in the field at the same time, suggest that support for gay marriage as opposed to civil unions, it's increased over time. Let's put it that way.
Okay, Alan Yang. Let's bring in Duncan. He's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Duncan, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I wanted to say that from a personal perspective, I don't have a problem with gay marriage at all. I have a number of gay friends. I am heterosexual myself and married and have children, but I have no problem with it. I think that the movement itself is going too rapidly. You're going to have a problem with acceptance from people because the expediency with which things seem to be transpiring in across the nation with this thing. And what I think happens is it rouses a very ugly head of an old stereotypical viewpoint of gays and lesbians. One is that all gay men want to sleep with any man that's willing to sleep with them, which I don't believe is true. And two, that all lesbian women are like sumo wrestlers or bikers, you know, which is not true. So I think you're border on pressing is to the point where people fall back into some real old fears that they have about these issues by pushing it too far. Now, I've watched the reality shows that have recently been on television concerning the gays. The Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, I just think is terrific. The other program, I think, is a bit, it's a bit disturbing for people. I think they're going to have a problem with that. And that's going to drive a wedge that's going to make getting some of these things on the agenda that these people want more difficult because it deepens the thread that this is a choice, not an innate something that you're born with.
Okay, Duncan. Let me just put that point to Alan Yang, that the pace of reform in itself is what might be causing the backlash.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the backlash, I appreciate a lot of the context that both you and your panelists have provided in terms of explaining this at least temporary backlash between May and July, because not only did we have the Ontario Canada decision and the reality of actual married same-sex couples across the border, plus the Supreme Court decision, plus a surge of discussion, on this really watershed event that really was connecting the dots between the decision itself and implications for gay marriage, plus Gay Pride Month, plus, as the caller was saying, this edgy gay programming during a period of summer reruns, plus, I think one of the other panelists mentioned a serious right-wing, well-organized effort to really mobilize public opinion against the possible eventuality of gay marriage after the Supreme Court decision. So what you have here is a radically altered informational context from which, ordinary citizens draw information to formulate their opinions. So I think that this whole confluence of different factors, which really ratcheted up the salience of a new issue, comparatively new issue for the gay rights movement like gay marriage, represents at least a moment of hesitation on the parts of certain segments of the public, period where, the public was perhaps jolted and absorbing the potential reality of actual same-sex marriage. But I think that as the debate continues, it would be very surprising to me to see that this, rather than being a transitory dip, amounted to a new status quo, if you will.
But while the debate continues, the political agenda is hotting up, Susan Page. We're waiting for a ruling any day now from the Massachusetts Judicial Supreme Court. President Bush has held back from backing a constitutional amendment, but he says he's got his lawyers looking at the issue.
Well, I definitely think that's an event to watch for, awaiting decisions both in Massachusetts and New Jersey from state courts. And if the courts find that same-sex couples have a right to get a marriage license, then I think this issue, it has definitely heated up in the last month or so, I think it's going to get much, much hotter because the reality of same-sex couples getting marriage licenses will be so much more immediate. I think that some of the evangelical conservatives I've interviewed say that indeed they think that will be a big jumping off point for their campaign against gay marriage, if that's what the state courts decide.
Tabiti, do you see gay marriage as becoming one of the defining values issues of the 2004 campaign?
It could well be. The Democrats, Howard Dean, as governor of Vermont, signed a civil unions bill that essentially allowed Vermont to be the one state in the union where that can take place. Gay people can be all but married. And I suspect that the president's comment the other day, marriage is between a man and a woman, and I think we ought to codify that one way or another. I suspect that was partly a kind of early warning shot at Mr. Dean and at other Democrats. There's two schools of thought about the White House reelection bid. One is that the key is the suburban mom, that they're looking to appeal to the suburban mom to compete in the Northeast and in California. The other is the West Virginia strategy, that the Republicans basically have said, no, we're going to play the cultural warfare card, because running against or even sort of dabbling in things like anti-gay rhetoric or symbolism and so on, that actually helps us in our base. And what we need to do is to get our base in the South and Central states out, and that's enough to put us over. Karl Rove has pointed out since the 2000 election that 4,000 evangelicals stayed home in that election. He wants them to go to the polls. He wants them to vote for Bush. This gay marriage issue is for them catnip.
Joyce is calling. Susan.
I was just going to say, the White House initially, right after the Texas decision, was very low-key about the president's position. The president got a question about it, and he basically tried to put it aside. He was much more kind of forward-leaning at his news conference last week. And, we know that the White House polls a lot more than we do. We assume that the change in his a tone toward this issue may reflect the fact that it's becoming an important issue to that Republican base and that there is a backlash. I'm not sure that the change in his tone doesn't – I think it's possible the change in his tone does reflect just the issue we're talking about this evening.
Joyce is calling from Provincetown, Massachusetts. Joyce, what do you want to say?
Yeah, hi. I'm a lawyer, and I work with lesbian and gay families and have for the last 10 years. I'm here in Provincetown celebrating Family Week, which is an annual gathering of lesbian and gay families from all over the country, sponsored by two really great organizations, Family Pride Coalition and Collage, which is a group of for children who have lesbian and gay parents. I think that people are very threatened by anything that is different, and I agree with what was said earlier by one of your panelists that lesbian and gay people are the people you can now, it's okay to discriminate against us. It continues to be okay. And whenever we're on the cusp of a big social change, of course there's going to be backlash. I do not believe the backlash will prevail. I believe that lesbian and gay people will get our civil rights and that we deserve them. And, you know, I find it kind of ironic when people talk about the suburban mom, because in my experience, the suburban mom might be a lesbian mother. And I think that politicians really need to pay attention to gay and lesbian parents. A lot of gay and lesbian people are bringing children into their lives in lots of different ways, and there have always been gay and lesbian families. I find it very ironic that the right, the Christian coalition and the right wing in this country is so threatened by gay and lesbian people.
But they see gay marriage as undermining the institution of heterosexual marriage.
I'm also a divorce lawyer. I don't think heterosexual people need any help from gay people to undermine the institution of marriage. I mean, they do a really good job all by themselves, and I think that it's silly. I think that that is just a silly, ridiculous thing to say, and most gay people I know agree. What possible threat could it be for people to recognize our right to make public our commitments to one another?
Alan Yang? I just wondered why this is, it seems, amongst critics of homosexuals, the gay lifestyle, is such a visceral issue. Gay marriage?
That question is posed to me.
It is indeed, yeah. What's your sense?
I mean, I think my sense is, just to give you a little bit of context, when we look at sort of public attitudes toward the rights of gays and lesbians in employment, specific occupations, housing rights, and these kinds of things, support is extremely high, as Susan Page was mentioning, roughly 9 out of 10 in the most recent Gallup poll. I think that the other issues like family issues, gay marriage, adoption rights have been slower comparatively to change, although all the recent trend data shows that actually change is occurring over time. You know, why that is, could have to do with the comparative newness of the issue. I mean, think back 10 years ago, before 1993, the issue of gay and lesbian marriage as an actual reality seemed a bit far off. And I think that the movement in public opinion from the low 20s and all the polling that was done in the early 1990s to the point now where we see polls that show support for marriage itself as opposed to civil unions, where civil unions you'll actually see higher marginals, is in the 40% range. So I think that actually represents, during a fairly short period of time, less than a decade, pretty large movement.
Andy's calling from Boston. Andy?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to hear the data about discrimination issues and higher rates of sort of acceptance around the country of equality. And I wonder if as the marriage issue, as these family issues get talked about in more in terms of equality on individual rights, if acceptance shouldn't follow. And that by that I mean when straight people and straight couples, not evangelical Christians, but people who are rather neutral or haven't considered the issue, hear about the litany of rights that you don't get if you're not a straight couple. things that have to do with tax and financial management, ownership of property, visiting in hospitals, picking kids up from school if you're not technically on the list as the parent because you're not married, applying for insurance policies, all of these things. If the data is, if there's so much momentum in the data, as the guests have said about employment discrimination and housing discrimination and whatnot, then on these individual issues that add up to marriage, civil marriage, there should be no problem.
So you're saying that advocates of gay marriage should be phrasing the arguments differently?
I'm not criticizing them because their struggle's been enormous. The sheer fact that we're having this discussion and that the marriage issue is so new is a testament to the fact that bigotry against gays has been so enormous for so long that they've had other fights to fight. So there's no criticism. It's simply an observation that when people talk in terms of the component rights, neutral, dispassionate individuals seem to listen. And so let's continue to do that. And let's talk not just about it in the context of marriage, but in the context of why civil unions may be inadequate. Because if they don't include all of those component rights, then they're not equal.
Jack Beattie, gay marriage as the final battle.
Well, I think that's very shrewd, what Andy was just saying, that if you keep nodding your head at these various rights, what they add up to is marriage, is a union that has a legal legitimacy. And Americans, are partial to the rhetoric of rights. That's what we're founded on. You could see it in Justice Kennedy's decision where he spoke about, he said, intimate decisions are a form of liberty. Well, that's right. And it should be a form of liberty, too, about visitation rights and insurance policies. Those are forms of liberty. And that's a powerful argument to Americans. We are still, despite everything, a country that values individual rights.
Susan Page, a rights issue rather than a sexuality issue?
I think equal rights is a powerful issue. So portraying this as civil rights is a powerful thing to do. But I actually think the most powerful thing that has changed public attitudes is a kind of cycle where more gay men and lesbians are living, being open about their sexual orientation with straight people around them. And that prompts people to, I think, reevaluate some of the stereotypes that Duncan, the earlier caller, talked about. You see that in politics. Chrissy Gephardt, openly gay, working for her dad. Mary Cheney, who is also gay, working for her father in next year's campaign.
Susan Page, we must take a break. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Also with us, On Point news analyst Jack Beattie and Anna Liang, lecturer at Columbia University. We're discussing attitudes about gays in America. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about public attitudes about gay rights. New poll numbers indicate Americans are basically evenly divided in their opinions. As all the historic changes this summer, the Supreme Court's decision to decriminalize gay sex, Canada's decision to okay gay marriage, caused you to give pause on where you stand on issues of gay rights. Are gay rights going too far? Is this country finally getting it right? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, and with On Point news analyst Jack Beattie. Also with me is Alan Yang. He's a lecturer at Columbia University and has been writing about public attitudes towards gay and lesbian issues and civil rights over the past 50 years. Jack Beattie, we've already referred to forthcoming court decisions in New Jersey and Massachusetts. Their rulings are likely to keep the issue alive during the coming political season. Do you see, though, moves towards a constitutional amendment that would formally restrict marriage to the union of a man and a woman as gaining momentum?
Well, it's really something when a Senate majority leader comes out and talks about that publicly. That's something. And to think he's a physician into the bargain. He may be the only physician in America with that position. But you know, I'm beginning to think that Bill Frist could well wind up being the Pete Wilson of this issue. Pete Wilson was the Republican governor of California who basically lost Hispanic votes. The Hispanic vote to the Republicans for a long time by sponsoring anti-Hispanic legislation in ballot measure in California. And Frist is playing with fire here. I mean, think of it. If 10% of the population is gay, that gets you to around 30 million people. Each of them might have, say, one parent. That gets you to 60 million. Each probably has two friends. That gets you to 120 million. That's a lot of people to make angry. And you know, there are very few families in America that don't have a gay brother or son or nephew or friend. But this touches families all over the country. And I think something so overt as that, so discriminatory, this kind of, what do they call it, category legislation, would just seem, it would be a step too far for the Republicans and one they could really regret.
Okay, Alan's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Alan, good evening.
Good evening. The point I want to make here is twofold. The first one is America's demographic is changing. We're getting a lot of immigrants coming from Latin America and Asia, and a great majority of these people are starting families. They're here to have children and to have the American dream. They're pretty much probably not going to be on the train of gay marriage and gay union. And so I think maybe Bush and company is speaking to them somewhat. But as this population increases, you'll see more of a backlash against gay marriage. And the great majority of these people happen to be Catholic as well. The second point, I think, is that the majority of gay people aren't really interested in having children. If you take a look at Provincetown, for example, the high school population, elementary population has been shrinking for years. And the ones that do have children need to have the rights to be able to one or the other take care of the child. The child grows up, and if a parent is injured or something happens or is incapacitated, the child could literally become a ward of the state. So as far as civil rights, it's a very important issue, but the backlash is going to grow, in my opinion, based on the demographic.
Susan Page, would you go along with that? Changing demography of the United States is a similar sort of issue really affecting Gene Robinson's affirmation and the kind of opposition there is from the Anglican Church in other parts of the world.
You know, the demographics of this issue were fascinating to look at in our poll because there were such great differences based on some demographics. The biggest difference on attitudes toward gay people came with age. The youngest people 30 and younger, were twice as likely to be accepting or tolerant on these issues as the oldest people we polled, those 65 and older. That would indicate that people are going to become more, that the population is going to become more and more tolerant because, you know, older people will die off. Younger people who have a more accepting attitude presumably will carry that with them as they get older. One of the other interesting demographics, if you live on the coast, you're much more accepting than you are if you live in the South or the Midwest. Maybe that's not surprising. One other thing, if you live in a big city, you're much more accepting than if you live in the suburbs, and you're even less accepting if you live in a small town or a rural community. So there are demographics of this to look at. Our sample size wasn't big enough to look at Hispanics, which is you really have to pull with big numbers to get sizable Hispanic populations. So the difference with Hispanics, that I don't know.
The New York Times report had a poll, I think, on Sunday, pretty much, or Saturday, pretty much pointing out, substantiating that point, that there's much more resistance among Hispanic voters to these sorts of issues than there is among the voters at large.
Alan Yang, given that there are changing demographics, is there a sense of this being a now or never issue, gay marriage, pushing for gay marriage?
Well, yeah, I just like to maybe pick up a little bit on Susan Page's point. I think that for me, in terms of my own research, one of the key engines that is driving long-term change over 30 years, you know, over the last 30 years, where you see, you know, while change has been gradual over time, change has trended almost to a question toward a direction of liberalization. And two things are happening there. One thing is that people in various subgroups are actually changing their opinion from anti to pro-gay positions. But another very important determinant of these, you know, 30-35 point changes over time is, in fact, this process of generational replacement, where you have these, you know, younger cohorts socialized into more socially, let's call it progressive or liberal times, that have decidedly different or higher levels of tolerance or acceptance than their generational elders. And so over time, it's entirely possible that you could actually have no one in the general public of the United States changing their opinion from, you know, anti to pro, but simply through this process over time, through this replacement process of younger, more liberal cohorts making up an ever-growing proportion of the adult population, that's how you get change over time.
We've just got time to take a quick call from Mitchell. He's calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Mitchell.
Hi, Julian. Thanks for having this conversation. I was calling because I wonder if we could change things around and we had a conversation about heterosexuals and asks if their lives were legitimate and if people cared about them and could they marry, or should black people marry, or Indian people marry, or should they have children? And if we had laws that kept them from doing that, what kind of response would we get from the rest of the public? In the sense that I've been fighting this fight as a gay man since I was in my 20s and in the 1970s, and I've seen the ebb and tide go for gay people back and forth all through the AIDS crisis and the discrimination that happened there, and when my friends couldn't even let their partner come into the hospital as they were dying, and horrible things in that nature. And then I've seen it come back again with things like Will and Grace and different, you know, where people are you know, willing to watch gay people on television. Yet my life still just goes on, and I make Jell-O, and my partner takes out the trash.
Would you like to marry your partner, Mitchell?
I would like to have the benefits of marriage. To marry my partner would be something between my God and my partner and I. But I should not be discriminated against so that I can't have Social Security benefits, so I can't see him if he goes into a hospital, if I can't take care of him when he's old. We've been together for many, many years, longer than the relationships of my heterosexual sisters. And yet I have to worry that I won't be able to take care of him when we're older. And I think that's a basic human right. It's not just a civil right. It's just a basic human right.
Jack Beatty, very difficult to respond to an argument like that.
That's a very moving argument. I mean, just think what he's saying. He wants to care. He wants love to be witnessed in actions, in kindness, in the things that we recognize as love. And he's saying that's officially out for gay people. How appalling.
Jack Beatty, many thanks. That was On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. I was also speaking to Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, and also to Alan Yang, lecturer at Columbia University, who's been writing about public attitudes towards gay and lesbian issues and civil rights over the past 50 years. Continue the conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, Joseph Lieberman on the future of the Democratic Party. This is On Point. Recent polls show former Vermont Governor Howard Dean leading his eight fellow Democratic presidential candidates in the key states of New Hampshire and Iowa. Dean has moved from a fringe candidate to a major player in the presidential race, much to the dismay of more centrist Democrats. Today, Senator Joseph Lieberman attacked those who believe the Democrats need to return to their leftist roots. Speaking at the National Press Club, Lieberman never mentioned any of his rivals by name, but his critique in large part appeared to be aimed at Dean. Here are excerpts from Lieberman's speech.
If George Bush and his bankrupt ideology are the problem, believe me, old Democratic policies like higher taxes and weakness on defense are not the solution. We need to reclaim the vital center of American politics for the Democratic Party. That is the way for Democrats to earn the opportunity to govern again. And that is the leadership I offer my party and my country. Let me put it in boxing terms. When the opponent is covering up on his right, a left hook is not going to knock him out. We've got to go right up the middle. Some Democrats, on the contrary, still prefer the old big government solutions to our problems. But my friends, with record deficits, a stalled economy, and Social Security in danger, we can't afford that. It won't work. The old way is wrong for America and wrong for the Democratic Party. Some respond to the health insurance crisis with a break-the-bank $2 trillion-plus program, leaving no money to create jobs, to invest in education, to support our firefighters and police officers, or shore up Social Security. That would be wrong for the Democratic Party and for America. Someone raised the walls of protectionism again. But we've got a record trade deficit, the highest of any nation in history. Our manufacturers are hemorrhaging jobs. We need more markets abroad today, not fewer. We need to build bridges, not barriers. That is right for the Democratic Party, and it is right for America. Some Democrats have said no to any tax cuts and would even raise taxes on the middle class. But middle class families have truly borne the brunt of George Bush's failed economic leadership. So we've got to help them, not burden them with even more taxes. That would be wrong for America and wrong for the Democratic Party. Some Democrats are silent about the marketing of violent or sexual entertainment to our children. But we should be allies with America's parents in the struggle to protect our children. Some said no to overthrowing Saddam Hussein, or they were ambivalent about it, either before or after the war. But we must not shrink from the use of force when our security or our values are at stake. That would be wrong for America, and it would be wrong for the Democratic Party. Doing what's right for America and for our party are truly one and the same. I share the anger of my fellow Democrats with George Bush and the wrong direction he has taken our nation. But the answer to his outdated extremist ideology is not to be found in outdated extremes of our own.
Connecticut Democratic Senator and presidential candidate Joseph Lieberman speaking earlier today at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Amada, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman and Tim Skog, with help from Julie Jopp and Sarah Cook. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Julian Marshall, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting corporate IT.